Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Welcome to the Mass Effect Lorecast, the podcast where we explore the vast universe of lore behind the Mass Effect games. We'll talk about all the details you may have missed, ask the hard questions, and more. Spectres, welcome back to the Mass Effect Lorecast. This is your host, Tom, or Robots, and I'm here, as usual, with the wonderful, the only N7 the legend. Actually, the only N7 the legend. There are several N7 legends. That's why we had to add the in the middle. How's it going, Sam? How you doing, buddy?
That's a good crash course as to why I had to choose the username that I did. Unfortunately, I would have gone with N7 legend, but then I would have gotten a weird number after it, and that's no fun. So no. Anyway, I'm doing well. I'm doing very well. Because I just bought a gaming PC
the other day. One of us.
So I finally pulled the trigger on it.
One of us.
And it is set to arrive on the 13th.
Still got to wait for it a little bit. But
and
one of us.
Tom here is actually the one who helped me find the deal. So this was a crazy deal. And assuming that everything works out well with the PC, I can't believe that, you know, I got this machine for this price. It's truly a work of art, and I'm going to be streaming Mass Effect Legendary Edition on it when I get it. So
You're going to turn all the details all the way up. You're going to have, you're going to have super good details, all the details. Real quick, for anybody who knows PC stuff, he's going to have a terabyte SSD on this thing. He's going to have a 3070 NVIDIA RTX graphics card. 16 gigs of RAM. What else do you have? You have a 560 AMD?
AMD Ryzen 5 5600X.
5600, right? So, yeah, this thing's, anything you throw at it, this thing's going to be able to run. You can turn all those details all the way up. It's going to be awesome. Put on, you know, 4X anti-aliasing. No jaggies. It's going to look sweet, dude.
Yeah, this is by far going to be the most advanced machine I will have ever owned. And just to give people another refresher as to how big of an upgrade this is going to be for me, my current PC that I'm doing this podcast on right now is a 2012 MacBook Pro that is running its hard drive. Its internal hard drive has died, and it is running its OS off of an external hard drive, which is an Amazon Basics brand external hard drive. So that's the level of the struggle bus that we're on at the moment, but not for long. We're going from the struggle bus to the Normandy.
It takes a full 7 minutes to boot. All right. So we have a we teased the episode today. The episode today was a surprise topic. We tweeted it out. We were like, hey, we're not telling you guys what episode you're getting today. And everybody who's hanging out with us on Twitch, the live show audience, all of these people are here going, yay, new PC. But what the heck are we talking about today? And so the chat in here has decided that we must be talking about nipples. And so today's topic, we're talking about the nipples of all the different races across the galaxy.
The hairy ones, the big ones, the small ones, the non-existent ones.
With multiple areolas, the ones with tattooed areolas, the ones with four-dimensional areolas.
I can see the BuzzFeed article now. 10 nipples in Mass Effect you didn't know you wanted.
You know what? I think we should start our own blog where we just make up details, like fake lore details about Mass Effect stuff. And then we just Photoshop pictures to make it look like it's real things. And we just see how long that goes until eventually we just get shut down.
Danny DeVito made a cameo in Mass Effect 3.
Amazing.
As a bolus.
Yeah. They motion captured and worked his face and modeled the face of the Volus after him. Look at the uncanny resemblance.
New leak just confirmed that Danny DeVolus is going to be a romanceable option in Mass Effect 4.
You won't believe what you have to do to get to first base. Or third.
Who's counting?
Who's counting? Oh, man. All right. But so what is the topic for today? Because I'm sure
we're not talking about nipples.
We're not talking about nipples.
So we've been talking about races of Mass Effect, the universe, since episode 6. And that's been about 17 weeks now. So this week we're talking about a pretty important group of beings that we haven't yet discussed. And that's because we really weren't sure if you can call them a race, or rather races, or not a race at all. We've also kept the subject of this episode a surprise, as you noted, Tom. So our viewers live don't yet know who we're discussing. Tom, you want to give them a hint?
That's not the right button.
Thanks.
That was the right button.
There we go. So I think everyone knows now who we're talking about. That's right. We are talking about the Reapers. And we're going to be... That would be an amazing interrupting sound throughout the rest of this lore cast series.
If we do a quiz show, whenever you get a wrong answer. I'm sorry, that is incorrect.
You are dead now.
You're dead, and everybody you've ever known is also dead. Sorry.
Yeah. Disclaimer, this is going to be a huge spoilers episode, obviously, because we're talking about the primary antagonist of the entire trilogy.
Yeah. And so what are they called again?
They're called the Reapers. In case you haven't heard the soothing sounds of the Reapers, you can buy 5 copies of the anniversary disc from Time Life. It all remastered. That's an old reference that I think only people who watched TV at like 2 a.m. will understand.
Yeah, right. Yeah, 15 years ago. Okay, cool.
Yeah. But we're going to try to explain this in such a way that even if you're unfamiliar with the series, we're going to introduce you to some of the nuances of the Reapers.
Whenever you say it, it just happens at this point.
I'm not it's even gonna be a long episode.
I'm not even hitting the button. It's just like, it's just learned. It's, I don't know. So, okay. All right. So where do we start?
So let's start with one of my favorites, the quotes and phrases that I attribute to all of the races. The Reapers are going to get one too, even though I don't.
He said it again. I'm sorry.
Even though it's like Pee-wee's Playhouse, it's the word of the day. Uh-huh. Even though I don't think that they're necessarily a race or races. But anyway, the phrase for them is, it's only hubris if I fail. That's a quote widely attributed to Julius Caesar. So for veterans of the series, I think they can obviously see why I've chosen it's only hubris if I fail. For the Reapers... I gave the pause there that time. I knew it was coming. because as we'll dive in to see, that they're pretty arrogant. So let's start with a basic overview. If you're new to the series, you might appreciate this, this part of the show. So as most people who have played through the series already know, though, the Reapers...
I should probably stop doing this.
Yeah. We'll move on.
I'll stop.
The Reapers
that.
Are ultra advanced synthetic organic starships. But because of this, we can't really talk about them as if they have a typical biology, because they don't. Each Reaper is not an individual at all. Each one is actually a quote unquote nation comprised of millions, if not billions, of harvested aliens from eras gone by.
That's freaking amazing. I love that. Okay, so by harvested, you're talking about the 50,000 year cycle, right?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So the Reapers cleanse the galaxy of all sentient life when they are at their technological apex, which they've calculated to be about every 50,000 years or so. And by cleanse, I mean that the Reapers abduct, slaughter, enslave, or process beings into more Reapers. They destroy entire planets with bombardments, and they Reaperfy ground shock troops to carry out their bidding.
Reaperfied. So how did they come up with 50,000 years? Like, how did they calculate that?
So it's because the Reapers created the advanced technology that galactic civilization depends upon and evolved around, the mass relay systems and the Citadel. So by creating these things and making them just accessible enough to life harboring planets, they basically ensured that they could more easily predict and control how intelligent life evolved in the galaxy. According to Vendetta, the Prothean VI on Thessia in Mass Effect 3, the development of galactic civilization and cycles of extinction are way too regular and repetitive in the order of how they happen to be a coincidence. They have, quote, the same peaks of evolution, the same valleys of dissolution. So, you know, basically something... recognizing organic life's affinity for the path of least resistance has arranged a set of pathways or rules that organics generally follow. And the Reapers are the .exe program that follows the same protocol every time, wiping out everything the same way every time, because effectively nothing changes, because that's the way it's been set up.
Okay, so how did the Reapers accomplish wiping out all intelligent life every 50,000 years? I mean, like, how did they distinguish between intelligent and primitive life?
Well, I'll answer this second question first, because it has a simpler but possibly vague answer. There are a few competing theories in the universe about how the Reapers distinguished between intelligent and primitive life. The first theory is, Has the species achieved spaceflight? If it has, it's gone. If it hasn't, it's fine. They're not going to touch it. I don't actually think that this is the rationale for the Reapers. This isn't, you know, how they decide, because they don't target the Yogg, and the Yogg are on the cusp of spaceflight. I mean, they're basically there. They're going to be there in like maybe a year or two, as the way the packet puts it to us in Mass Effect 3. Mm. Well, and besides, how would the Reapers know that, right? How would the Reapers know every, like, because they're dormant in dark space. So how would they know which species are about to achieve space flight? It just seems way too specific. So that brings me to my next theory. Has the species activated its nearest mass relay yet? Now, with the Reapers having created the mass relays, it would make sense if they get a little ping, a little notification, right?
Yeah, every they get time. A little buzz. They get a little, boop, boop, this like, one's on. Ding, okay.
Ding dong.
Ding dong.
These neighbors, it's time for them to die now.
The monkeys on this little blue ball woke up. Okay, got it.
Yeah, exactly. Got it. And we will come back to them later. And then that kind of leads me to my third and... my personal theory. Does the organic species have the capability of creating synthetic life? I think this is the crucial factor in whether or not the Reapers decide that they want to exterminate a race. And we'll get into why my personal theory might apply a little bit later. Mm-hmm. But to answer your first question, how did they accomplish wiping everyone out every 50,000 years? Mm-hmm. Well, in what was the result of trial and error from countless cycles beforehand, we know the Reapers used the Citadel as a front door into the Milky Way from dark space, where they remain dormant between cycles.
Dark space.
And it turns out that the Citadel is a mass relay itself. So since every cycle basically adopts the Citadel as their central heart of government, it's a huge target. And that's the way that it was meant to be. The Reapers built this enormous galactic space station with the express intent of having these organic races from then on out adopting it as a heart of government, because it's just built that way.
They're like, here, move on in. It's easy to just live here, everybody. Just come on in.
Yeah, this enormous spaceship that's totally in great condition and kept alive by these mysterious green creatures that don't respond to you whatsoever. Don't worry about its previous inhabitants. They just disappeared.
Yeah, don't worry about them. Also, Dark Space is my new space metal band.
Dark Space, yes.
We are Dark Space.
They are...
Glug, 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 glug.
They're the headliners for the Vorcha and the Yogg.
Right. Yep. Yes.
And definitely the antithesis of Darwin's finches.
Yes. Although they get along really well backstage.
Yeah. The on-screen feud is really just a stunt.
Yeah. It's just a stunt. Yeah. They're all into they're all into organic food and
they all dine at vegan restaurants. Yeah, like this new place called Lemongrass.
Yep, yep. They all smoke their doobies and go out for organic food after the show. Sorry, go on.
So from there, from the Citadel being adopted, I mean, it's pretty much a cakewalk. The Reapers are kilometer long, near invulnerable, super advanced living starships with the ability to brainwash all life within a vicinity of each starship.
Yeah. Hey, pause real quick. Have you guys ever seen the YouTube videos where they compare the different sizes of starships? There's one, I don't remember who does it, but he does one of those where like it's actually everything's rendered in 3D, like actual models, and they start with like a person and then it gets to like an X-wing and things like that, and then it shows it compared to like buildings in New York City and gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and then eventually there's a Reaper like standing above New York City. You need to go look that one up. It's freaking awesome.
Yeah, I also recommend that video. I've seen it. Don't know when I did, but I remember seeing it.
It's been around for a while.
Just
but
having an entirely new appreciation for the threat of the Reapers.
Yeah, it's pretty... Like, when you actually see that thing standing over New York City, you go, okay, yeah, I get it. Okay, yeah. That's how big a kilometer-sized standing Reaper would be over New York City? Okay, yeah. We've got no chance. Got it.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. So obviously, it's fairly easy for them to slice through conventional defenses, even in the Mass Effect universe, because no matter how advanced humanity and the Turians and the Asari are, they're not nearly as advanced, which makes sense when you consider the fact that the Reapers have had millions of years to perfect their weapons, armor, tactics, whereas their opponents, every time, really only have about 50,000 years to work with.
Yeah. That makes sense.
So they're at a disadvantage. The Reapers are definitely playing an opponent with a handicap every time. So, which is by design. So the Reapers, you know, like I said, they attack the seat of government right off the bat and easily overwhelm each cycle's government by instantly cutting off the head of the bureaucratic body. This is what happened to the Protheans. It's why they vanished. In fact, the name Reaper was merely created by the Protheans to give a voice to their destruction, as Sovereign puts it in Mass Effect 1. Mm. Just a little tangent here about the Protheans. While we're on the topic, not all of them died during their cycle's extermination. In fact, some scientists on Ilos survived through hiding and realized that the Reapers were evolving individually, enough so that only one Reaper still responded to the signal that the Citadel put out when it was genocide time. So I want to repeat that again because there's a lot to dissect in that idea alone. The Reapers were evolving individually, because they are a nation of people. Each Reaper is supposed to be like an entire race, basically. and they've kept the genetic data from each entire race in the form of one Reaper. And so these Reapers are evolving. They're still evolving, because although they are part synthetic, they are also part organic. And so the Protheans realize this, and the Reapers have evolved all, you know, way past being able to decipher the Citadel signal, except for one. And that Reaper's name was Sovereign. So the scientists devised a way to reverse engineer a mass relay. They traveled to the Citadel after it was captured during their cycle, and they altered the signal enough so that Sovereign could not automatically open the portal, which would have allowed the Reapers to pour in with Blitzkrieg. Long story short, those Prothean scientists gave Shepard's cycle a fighting chance.
That's crazy. That's crazy stuff.
It's crazy, right? Because the game puts it forth as a minor detail.
Yeah, no, that's right?
Do you remember that?
That's like a. I mean, it's just such an important fluke. Like it's the one piece in the cycle that doesn't repeat.
It's the hole in the Death Star's chute.
It's the hole. Like it's the one thing that's out of place. Like, had that not happened, we would have ended up just in another cycle.
It's crazy. It was like a hair's breadth, you know, between extermination and being able to succeed, of course, which you do no matter which ending you pick. Actually, in three of the four endings of Mass Effect, you succeed.
Right.
But yeah, it's because of that action by the Prothean scientists who survived. As for the Protheans who didn't survive, well, when the Reapers could not create them into another Reaper, they made them into collectors. So they end up becoming the pawns, the next ground shock troops of the Reapers, so that the Reapers can use those shock troops to process other races into more Reapers.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so the Reapers just come from dark space and harvest the Protheans. That's about as far back as we know?
Not necessarily. They've been around far longer than that, nearly a billion years. But no one alive at this point knows for how many cycles they've done this. The Reapers themselves claim to Shepard to have no beginning and no end. Very, very, you know, Alpha and Omega.
Sure.
But we know that this isn't true.
Right.
For one, we know that Sovereign, while insanely beefy, can't take the combined military strength of the Asari, humans, and Turians. Could barely take the Alliance's fifth fleet by itself. And two, we know from preliminary findings from the discovery of the Leviathan of Dis that Reapers must be at least a billion years old. But as for the whole no beginning and no end, I think players should know that this is total bullshit and nothing more than hubris from Sovereign. Yes, the Reapers have a beginning and an end. They were created by someone. But we'll get into their origins and the why surrounding their cyclical genocide after the break.
Sounds like propaganda.
It is.
Yeah.
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 Don't fear it's pure propaganda. Yeah.
Don't fear the Reaper. Oh, wait, that's a cowbell. I'm looking for like cowbell.
What? You've got a Reaper and the only prescription is more cowbell.
Yep. Oh, these are not. That's close. I was looking for a. Oh, don't keep playing it. I was looking. Anyway, let's go to the middle of the show.
Message coming in. Patching it through.
I am Sovereign, and this station is mine. I like the sound of that.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, Simone.
Yes, Chad.
What would you say is your favorite bad movie?
Oh, where would I start? But probably at Zombie Strippers.
Oh, yeah, which we've actually done on our podcast, Fresh Tomatoes, the movie podcast. This is a podcast where we take some of the worst movies ever created, and even some of those movies that you might have thought were brilliant, but still got a bad critic score, and we say nice things about them, because you know what? Someone put the effort in, so we're gonna be there, fighting in their corner.
Absolutely, Chad. Even if the movie was total garbage, there are some makeup artists that gave it their all, and we're here to recognize that.
Exactly. And with really fun themes every week, such as National Treasure Week, Weddings Week, movies with Jeremy Irons and dragons in them. How could you go wrong? By joining us every Tuesday and Thursday for some optimism in your life.
And like we say at the end of every episode, we love you and there's nothing you can do about it.
We love you and there's nothing you can do about it. Goodbye!
I thought maybe there would be like cowbell hits, like on a drum set, not the shaking of a cowbell. Anyway, I was trying to find a quick sound effect. Anyway, thank you everybody for joining us for the show as usual, and thank you to all of our patrons. And we've got a few things to do this week because it's a new month. This is September already. Crazy, right? So we've got to thank all of our new patrons from last month. So that also includes
a new subscriber.
And a new subscriber.
Awesome.
Thank you, Kevin. On Twitch, we got a new subscriber. Kevin, thank you for the subscription. So we've got that. We've got new subscribers on the Patreon, including Sam B, Meister Anchor, Devin A, Tyler O, Stagger and Stumble upgraded last month. Thank you for that, Stagger. Timothy M. And Gillian B. Thank you to all the new subscribers. You guys are awesome. Thank you to all of the subscribers. And then also thank you to our tier 5+ subscribers. I'm pulling you guys up as we talk right now. And that includes Sovereign and Stagger and Stumble. So, man, you guys are awesome. We've got 37 subs this month. And in other news, and this is fun stuff, I have been tinkering around with some of my other Patreons, and Sam knows about this. On the Fallout Lorecast and the Elder Scrolls Lorecast, I recently upgraded our Patreons to include merch, like t-shirts and stickers. So I've been working on some designs, and I haven't finished my designs for the Mass Effect Lorecast yet, but that's something I'll be rolling out hopefully in the next few weeks. I need to finish some design work, but when that gets done, what that means is that if you are a current patron, then at no extra cost, depending on what tier you are at, you will be starting to get merch. So This should work like this. If you are a $10 tier patron, then you will start getting stickers. And if you are a $25 tier or higher patron, you will start getting shirts. And maybe we'll mix it up in some other ways. It depends on what I'm able to do. But we might throw in some other stuff. Like, who knows? Maybe we'll throw in, like, I don't know, sweatshirts or whatever else. We'll figure it out. I'll see what else is available. We'll put stuff together. But I need to figure out some designs first. And I've been working on some fun things. So maybe we'll even do Darwin's Finches. If you guys want a Darwin's Finches shirt, maybe we can figure something like that out. We'll see. It'll be some fun stuff. So that means current patrons, no extra cost. You'll start getting some cool gear from us. And if you want to upgrade in the future, I will let you know. Or if you want to sign up in the future in order to not only get all the things that you can currently get at the current tiers, but also some really cool stuff like stickers or shirts. And who knows, maybe we could even do like mugs or, you know, maybe some other things. We'll figure it out. It'll be awesome. If you have some fun ideas for shirts, or if you have fun ideas for even other kinds of things that we could add to the Patreon, then let us know. We'd love to find out what your thoughts are on that. And you can always go to patreon.com/MassEffectLoreCast. Check out all the different tiers and the things that you can do to help us out. And we would love your help, especially if you feel like we've helped you get through the workday, your workouts, your drive to work, or just, you know, doing your dishes. Anything like that would be awesome. So thank you to all of our subs. You guys are amazing. Thank you so very much. All right, let's talk about some reviews. We've got some new reviews we've got to read out because we had some show up this last week. Let's start with this one. Jacob R. Spencer from the United States wrote, "I should go." 5 stars. Jacob writes, "I've been tuning in on Spotify since day one. Robots and N7's chemistry just gets better and better. I'll be honest by saying that it seemed to take some time for them to really vibe, but they really are starting to come into their own as a team. Mass Effect fans should absolutely tune into this podcast. At the time of writing this, they're just wrapping up the races episodes, but there's already been so much content from just that. Fans are treated to some of the coolest sociology, political, ideological, biological facts about all kinds of alien races existing on this side of the Citadel, and it's set to only get better now that the groundwork has been laid by this hardworking, wildly entertaining duo. To top it all off, they're both just great people." Well, shucks. They didn't write it. Well, shucks. That was just my response. "In general, the Discord channels they run show just how down to earth and genuinely friendly they are to their community, and it means the world. The only critique I have is it just can't get enough of them. But that's just because they're already both so busy producing all kinds of content for Robots Radio. Keep up the great work, you truly bombastically talented and otherwise beastly team of terrifyingly brutal battle turtle buddies." Awesome. I love this.
That just warmed the cockles of my heart.
Oh boy, your cockles. All right. do we need a Battle Turtle Buddies shirt also? Man, I need...
Oh yeah.
I can do design work. I don't know that I'm an artist, so we would need somebody to design us some Battle Turtle Buddies.
I'm sure Twitter could help us out.
Maybe Twitter can help us out. Can anybody do Battle Turtle Buddies? Here's the other thing, is that the designs that are going to go up on the Patreon are never going to show up in the shop. So they will be only for patrons, never to be sold outside of Patreon. So once they're no longer on Patreon, they'll never be able to get them anywhere else. So if you want limited edition stuff, that's where you're going to have to go get it. Then we've got Clumsy Ninja Fan for Life from Australia. This person, while upside down, wrote, "Exactly what I was looking for and more. Do you guys get the upside down joke because they're on the other side of the earth? Not because they were actually upset. Anyway, I'll go on. "I work 8-hour shifts and needed that Mass Effect fix through the day to keep me going while waiting to get home to play the Legendary Edition. And I gotta say, this podcast delivers. Lore, facts, scenarios, real-world comparisons. These guys have perfected the right amount of everything you would want in a lore-themed podcast. Both Tom and Sam bring their own unique strengths to the table, bouncing what-ifs and jokes off each other. The chemistry alone is super fun to listen to. Guys, you would like to hang out with and talk games all day." That's true. We're super fun like that. "I highly recommend," and they're super humble. "I highly recommend this to anyone looking to dive deeper into the Mass Effect universe and have some good laughs with along the way." Well, thank you, Clumsy Ninja. That's super sweet of you. That's awesome. And then we have one more. The Wes Botron in Canada writes, "Now this is podcasting. You guys are absolutely fantastic and so much fun to listen to. The conversations between you feel so natural, especially when you guys go off on random tangents." Man, we've got people who actually like our tangents now. This is great. which is what happens in conversations. I super appreciate all the dad jokes, no matter how cheesy, corny they are. Well, thank you very much. All around, great show. Also, I've heard rumblings about a Darwin's Finch's second album coming. What? This is news to me. Did you hear about a second album?
Well, you know, the success of Horizontal Collectivism was just astronomical. You know, it doesn't surprise me.
I heard that they sold like 372 billion copies across the galaxy. So it was a big hit.
Yeah. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if they're poised for 42 separate albums.
Wow. That's a lot of albums.
That's the answer.
That's great.
That's their last album. Right. The 42nd album is going to be called The Answer.
The Answer to Life, the Universe, yep. and Everything. 42nd album. Whew, that's a good reference there. All right. Thank you to everybody who takes the time to help us out by leaving reviews, especially these guys, and ratings and things like that. And even just telling your friends, if you have friends who love Mass Effect, let them know about the show. That's probably the best thing you could possibly do. So thank you to everybody. And genuinely, like we joke around and stuff, but we love that you love the show. And thank you for your kind words. We really do appreciate it. So what else do we have to talk about in the mid break?
Well, we got an exciting announcement about the next Mass Effect patron chat.
Yeah.
Of course, as we all know, and as we've said before, the end of the month, tier 4 patrons and higher can join us on the episode. And the topics of those episodes are normally decided by the patrons themselves. However, Tom and I wanted to step in and kind of spice things up a little bit and install the first Mass Effect trivia show. So patrons are going to battle. They're going to go head to head to see who has the deepest knowledge of the games and the lore.
Like turtles?
And the winner will gain the temporary title of Honorary Spectre.
Can we make them Honorary Battle Turtle? Baby Battle Turtle?
I tell you what, buddies? The winner can be the honorary whatever they want to be.
Okay, cool.
In true RPG fashion.
There you go.
And, you know, it'll also severely impress Tom and I, because I've written some of these questions to be very difficult. Seriously, some of these questions are really obscure, and I will be just shocked if someone gets all of them right.
This is going to be so good. Yeah. So make sure you sign up. This is tier 4 and higher. If you want to join us by the end of the month, make sure you sign up. This would be at our regular time. So we are currently recording, and the recording starts at 10:30 p.m. Eastern on Sunday nights. And so that's 7:30 Pacific. And if you live in a different time zone, then Google that and you'll figure it out. But that's the time that the recording happens. And that's the time we have to stick to, because otherwise it's like corralling cats. So if you can't make the time, then I'm sorry if that just doesn't work for you. But that's the time we're going to have to stick with. So hopefully if you can and you can join us, we'd love to have you. We're going to set up the game show that we can fit as many people who can make it can join us. And then you get bragging rights. You get to be like winner for the month, winner chicken dinner. The month, and I guess that's a different game, but it is a saying, so at least you can still say the saying. So you got that.
Maybe we'd have to create a one of a kind, you know, Mass Effect Lorecast Trivia Champion shirt or something for them.
Oh man, now I really needed somebody to design something for me. The problem with that is that it takes so long to do custom shirts and get them shipped out. By the time like it actually gets there, it would be like a month or two later. I wish there was something we had that we could like get to them right away. Maybe we could make like a little, I don't know, like an art thing that they could use and put like on their profile picture, like on their Discord or something.
Oh yeah, like a badge.
Yeah, like
or
a badge.
Or maybe a roll.
Yeah, a roll or a badge. Something that you can just kind of flaunt wherever you put it on your Twitter account. You can put it on your Discord account. And you can just kind of like everywhere you go, you can just be like, look at me. Like, I'm the Mass Effect Lore Master of the Month or something like that.
There we go. Lore Master.
That's it. That's nice.
Yes. I like that idea. But yeah, that's pretty much all we got. That's a lot of news. Oh, speaking of patrons, I believe we should probably issue a reminder to Radio Dex. Radio Dex, in case you haven't heard, you are the winner of the Limerick contest, previous contest that we ran.
Yep. Yeah, let us know that you found that out, because we'd love to have you join us at the end of the month, because obviously you weren't able to make it last month, so we'd love to have you. All right, well, we've got more Reaper stuff to talk about. So let's go on with the rest of the show.
Spit it out, or are you trying to build suspense?
You're so dense, sir. Obviously, I do not know as much about human relationships as I thought.
Okay, so we know the Reapers aren't infinite. They aren't the Alpha and the Omega. They're not gods. So, do they have a creator, though? And if so, who?
So that takes us to a mysterious ancient race of massive deep sea beings with mind control powers named, not Cthulhu, the Leviathans.
The sea slugs.
The sea slugs. The, oh man, what's the name of those people in ESO?
The Slowed.
Yeah, the Slowed.
Oh.
The Slowed are the ultimate.
It's connected. We know. Elder Scroll, the Tamriel is just a planet. Mundus is just a planet in Mass Effect. All right, there we go. Now we know.
Exactly. Confirmed. No, it takes us to the Leviathans. When Commander Shepard, the only known being to encounter the Leviathans directly in this cycle, meets them in Mass Effect 3, the Leviathans claim to have created a, quote, intelligence in their time that went haywire.
Somebody yelled at me. The planet's called Nern. Mundus is everything. Just to put that out there before I get yelled at.
How dare you?
I can't believe he does a lore podcast about Elder Scrolls. He doesn't even know the planet's called Nern. Sorry, guys.
How dare him mess it up late on a Sunday night when he's talking about a different game.
Sorry, everybody. All right, sorry. Go on. So, wait. The intelligence went haywire?
Yes. And to understand why the Reapers are the way they are, let's back up a little bit to understand their creators. So, there's almost nothing left. No ruins, no documents, no writings of the Leviathan's race. Just one instance of cave paintings. So it's hard for us to know too much about them, aside from what they tell Shepard. And this may have been an intentional action from the Leviathans to hide all traces of their existence. But according to a Systems Alliance research group named Task Force Aurora, the Leviathans likely evolved on a planet with one other sapient species. Being bound to the ocean, the Leviathans eventually developed an ability to communicate telepathically and through objects. So they used this ability to dominate land-based species to serve their needs. This isn't too different from the Thorian in Mass Effect 1, who enthralled species through toxic spores and then could use its subjects to communicate with each other.
Sounds, I don't know. There's some moral issues with this, but go on.
Certainly. Certainly some dominating moral gray area here.
Yeah.
It's not, I don't think that the Leviathans ever really debated it though.
Yeah, probably.
Eventually
not.
They do dominate.
Everybody loves a good slave race, right?
Oh yeah. And it turns out that the Leviathans, you know, create the land species that was coexisting with them on that world, the sapient species. They dominate them to achieve space flight, because otherwise the Leviathans could not achieve the space flight because they're sea bound. Right. They're massive creatures, larger than whales, and they're in the ocean. So they can't achieve space flight otherwise. And this Alliance research group speculates all this, and then it's kind of proven when Shepard meets them, and then they dominated species across the galaxy. So they get to space flight through enthralling this one sapient species on their homeworld. And then they just take these objects, which they can control minds and talk to people through, to other worlds. And then they control those other aliens. But there was a problem. The Leviathan's thralls kept creating synthetic life to help them out. And that synthetic life inevitably rebelled, often killing large portions of the organic thralls.
Wait, we've never heard this story before.
No, this is totally new to the series, and this is a definite curveball that no one saw coming.
Synthetic life rebelling against the creators, this doesn't ever happen.
Right, at this point, the theme is a little bit cliche in the series itself. But the Leviathans created a solution, an intelligence, otherwise known as the catalyst, to preserve organic life at all costs. Ironically, as the intelligence tried to find ways to carry out that order, it created an army of pawns that were dispatched to collect genetic data from species throughout the galaxy, much like the collectors in Mass Effect 2.
Okay, so how did the intelligence create the Reapers then?
It used its pawns to slaughter most of the Leviathans. And this was a total betrayal that somehow the Leviathans didn't see coming, and used their genetic data to create the first Reaper named Harbinger, who took on the Leviathan's likeness.
That's why they look like giant space shrimp.
Yes, so the oldest Reapers look like their creators, the Leviathans,
right?
Harbinger included. And so that is where they gain their likeness. And, you know, who would have guessed the intelligence rebels against the Leviathans? Although maybe rebel isn't the right word, because according to the catalyst, it and its spawns were merely fulfilling the Leviathan's orders to preserve organic life.
Mm-hmm. Cloudy Atlas says they look like cuttlefish. Yeah, that's probably better.
Yes, I think that's the best relative that we have here on Earth. The rationale on the part of the catalyst is organics will always create synthetics to improve their own lives, and synthetics will evolve by surpassing their creators. So by harvesting technologically advanced species, both organic and synthetic, and storing these old species within invulnerable Reaper bodies, there's room for new life to flourish and grow.
You know, they could have saved a lot of these races could have just saved a lot of, I don't know, trouble by just watching the Terminator movies.
Yeah, what were they thinking?
Just watch freaking Arnie. Just be like, listen, look what Arnie's doing. Okay, don't make smart machines, because they're going to come back and they're going to kill you.
And short-sighted.
Then, yeah, like, just don't do it. Okay, so we've talked a lot about lore here, but we really haven't talked a whole lot about the Reapers yet. We've got a lot of background. What about the Reapers? What else do we know about the Reapers?
Yeah. So you could say that. Fun fact, if you were curious as to exactly how Reapers turned people into more Reapers, there's some deleted dialogue from Mass Effect 2 that sheds a little insight. According to Edie, the captive humans on the collector ship were being reduced to their basic components by being dissected down to the atomic level. The data from the process could then be uploaded into a Reaper's neural network, thus storing the knowledge and the essence of the individual that was liquefied in the process. Which makes sense why Harbinger then says being turned into a Reaper is a form of rebirth. And later he says to Shepard that Shepard is the one wasting lives when Shepard is the one fighting the human Reaper. So if you're following their rationale, that makes sense, that they honestly believe that Shepard is the one wasting lives.
Right. Because they are recycling lives, you could say.
Yeah, in a very convoluted way.
Right, right. Side note, go watch The Expanse. Have you seen The Expanse yet?
I just started it, and dude, I like it a lot. It's very gritty.
Are you past season one yet?
No, I'm in episode one.
Oh my god, do you have to? Oh, listen.
I'll be watching a lot of it.
Watch it all tonight. That's your job. Your job is to not sleep.
I gotta work.
Your job is to not sleep and watch all four seasons of it tonight, which is more hours than there are tonight. You just gotta put them all on like.
Four, I gotta work and I'm like.
You just gotta put them all on four times speed, watch them all tonight, and then we're gonna talk about it tomorrow and you're not going to work. All right.
If I was a Solarian, I could probably do that.
But we need to talk about some similarities. I'm not going to tell you what similarities, but we need to talk about some similarities going on here. Also,
yeah.
Also, definitely. The best freaking physics in any sci-fi.
It's anyway. So lore heavy. I feel like this series is so lore heavy because I've started episode one and I'm already like,
you're lost.
Holy shit, what the fuck are they talking about?
You will catch up. You will catch up.
Yeah.
I promise you. And it's one of those things where, like, it will take you 3 or 4 episodes to start feeling like you're catching up. And by the end of the first season, you'll be like, okay, I think I get a handle on this. By the end of the second season, you're going to be fine. But, like, no, it's good. Anyway, sorry, side notes. But, like, everybody go freaking watch The Expanse. Do it. Go. If you like space stuff, go do it. All right, sorry. But we have to talk.
Yeah.
There's certain things, parallels and things, conceptually and whatever, that we have to talk about. But anyway, go on.
Yeah, and there's a lot of, there are many different, you know, common threads throughout a lot of different sci-fi series.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of themes and things that come up, but sure, absolutely.
There's also a lot of conjecture as to whether the Reaper's logic is inherently flawed, or rather, I'm sorry, the Catalyst's logic. Because as it turns out, the Reapers are nothing more than a tool of the Catalyst. Mm-hmm. The Catalyst is the intelligence. The Reapers are now the glorified, strengthened pawns.
They're the tool
of the Catalyst, yeah, right. Of the intelligence. And so there's a lot of conjecture as to whether the Catalyst's logic is inherently flawed, destroy organics to save them, etc. And of course, there are plenty more plot points from the games that we could discuss in this episode. But you know what? I don't want to spoil everything. A large portion of what we know about the Reapers that we haven't yet discussed in this episode is just their story with Shepard. It's it's the story of, you know, Mass Effect 1-3. And as I said, I don't want to spoil everything. I think that it's our goal in these episodes to supplement the game experience, not right. to replace it. Yeah. So if you're curious, go play them or read the wiki in its entirety. Mm-hmm. I don't know. there's also other external media like the books by Drew Karpyshyn, which I would highly recommend.
Nice. Okay, so let's wrap this up. Final lessons here.
Sure. I think there's three. I think there's three final lessons, really. Okay. One, the Prothean scientists gave humanity and its cycle a fighting chance.
Heck yeah, they did.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
OGs. Right OGs. There.
And yeah, I think, okay, so if we get Mass Effect 4, and it is clearly, which seems like it's going to be a direct sequel to 3, this needs to be like, there needs to be a freaking museum where you go see these, like, you know, somewhere enshrined in there is like, if it wasn't for these Prothean scientists, we never would have stood a chance. Like, there needs to be something, right? Like,
there does. And in fact, like, I keep going back to that detail because as small of a detail as it may seem, it's like, well, of course, that seems like a pretty detail that, you know, detail that's easy to write in. Even though they did that, they wrote the game in such a way that it's like a minor detail, mm-hmm. that when you find it, you feel like you've uncovered this trove of lore, which in my opinion, isn't just good writing. It's good game design.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I just think I just keep coming back to that. And I think that's one of the, you know, big lessons that we should take away from this. And two, the Reapers, especially Sovereign, are speaking out of hubris. They do have a beginning. They do have an end. They do have weaknesses. Their existence and motives can indeed be comprehended by mortals. And their goals are not impossible for organics to understand. Contrary to Sovereign's speech on Vermeier in Mass Effect 1, the Reapers are not untouchable. Their arrogant overtures should not be trusted. Put quite simply, they're full of shit.
Yeah, it's all propaganda. That's all it is.
Yeah. It's meant to demoralize and discourage.
Right. It's to make them seem bigger and better than they actually are. Which is, of course, you know, any enemy force is going to be doing that, right? It's like, if right. you can win the battle before it starts because you've demoralized the enemy, then congratulations.
Any organic enemy, I think, would think of that. But it's interesting to see a synthetic organic take advantage of that kind of tactic.
If it's a tactic that works, then it would be rational to use the tactic.
Yes.
So therefore, a synthetic might use it.
And again, yeah, given how many cycles the Reapers have been through, maybe this is just something that they did once and they found that it works very well.
Right.
So
Or studied a race. Maybe they studied a race that they destroyed and they saw that this was very effective for that race. So they, you know, I mean, they basically, you know, consumed those races and kind of worked them into themselves anyway, right? So
yeah,
why not?
Yeah. And the third lesson, which has two different parts. If we want to be cynical, I think we can infer that all of this, all the events of Mass Effect 1 through 3, with the Catalyst as the grand villain behind the curtain, is really all because the Leviathans didn't want to lose their playthings and thralls.
Okay.
That's why they did all this, because they didn't want the organics to be killed by the synthetics that those organics would create. So why wouldn't they want that? Well, because our tools are dying.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, that is their power. Like, their power lies right. in their the use of those tools.
So if we want to be cynical, that's the way we'll look at it. Right. Right. But if we want to be pragmatic, maybe optimistic, I'd say we can't possibly say the Catalyst's logic is justified. A, because that would force us to trust the narrative of a space AI who has been emotionally manipulating the player into completing its mission for it. B, because really, the Catalyst is so convinced that organic life will always create synthetic life, which will then destroy it entirely. Based off of what plethora of evidence in universe that the Catalyst would have known. It's not like the Catalyst came to this conclusion after witnessing countless cycles and then gathering a ridiculously large sample size. It didn't. It came to this conclusion shortly after it was created, while still under the operation of the Leviathans. So I question the legitimacy of its conclusion there. Let's also not forget that the Geth did kill nearly every Quarian, but the operative words there are nearly. They purposefully allowed the Quarians who did remain to retreat. They had the power to, but the Geth willfully did not exterminate the Quarians. They could have made them go extinct, but they didn't. And the Geth are fully synthetic, of course. And C, because as we know, evolution is trial and error. It is random, and although there may have been many instances in the Mass Effect universe where they created rebel against the creator, that doesn't mean that will always be the case. See example Geth with Quarian.
So those
are lessons I think we should take from it.
Yeah, it makes sense. It's not like they, you know, I mean, if they're billions of years old, they didn't come to this conclusion after, you know, 10,000 cycles. They came to the conclusion first and then acted on it and then acted as if the conclusion was correct from that point forward.
Yeah. There's a lot of retroactive justification there.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh. It's a solid point. Yeah. Interesting. It's true. I wonder, that the synthetics would rebel against the creators, but that rebellion could take many, many different shapes.
It could, but it doesn't mean that. So the original purpose why they were created was the Reapers were created by the intelligence, by the Catalyst, as a means to preserve organic life indefinitely in digital form in a Reaper. Because the assumption was that as soon as that organic life creates synthetic life, that will be the end of that organic life.
Right.
Like the synthetic life will exterminate all of that organic
life. Right. That's a very specific conclusion. Right. That's what
I'm saying. Also very interesting to note, how many cycles did this happen where the Catalyst said, this is because the synthetic life is exterminating organic life. But what ends up happening? How much evidence do we as the player have of synthetic life from previous cycles?
Yeah,
none. Right. So that would serve to, you know, tell us that the Reapers also exterminated them too. So this kind of goes back to my earlier point about what was the protocol for the Catalyst deciding whether or not to deem a race intelligent enough to be harvested or too primitive to be harvested. Was the race capable of creating synthetic life?
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, that's interesting. Now, final thoughts on this, because because there are gaps in our knowledge about all of this, that leaves some really interesting places that the writers can go with it. For example, there are some vagaries around what the Leviathan, what their actual motivations were beyond just their own goals of, you know, expanding into the universe or sustaining their own existence or whatever, right? And what if there was the concept of harvesting these other intelligent life forms? Is there more of a goal to that than what there seems to be?
There could be. And I think that they could very well tie this into the dark energy plot line. Mm-hmm. When I was doing the research for this episode, of course, I remembered it mentioned in dialogue, but I came across so many different crossroads of the dark energy plot line and the Reapers.
Yeah.
And so it lends credence to the, you know, theory that we've discussed on some patron chats,
right,
about how the dark energy plot line was canon.
Or even if that's not it, is there some greater big bad out there? Is there some reason, is there some multi-galactic reason why Reapers would be harvesting intelligent life from the Milky Way galaxy in order to continue their own evolution towards some sort of greater power, some sort of greater evolutionary goal, in order to overcome some sort of greater big bad? That's not even the dark energy issue. That's
right, because there's not even like an emotional response from the Leviathans when you tell them about what's happening. A, because they already know. B, because they're like, well, the catalyst is doing its job. It's just not the job that we imagined.
Yeah.
And then they decide to get involved reluctantly and kind of indirectly. But then, interestingly enough, if you've played the Leviathan DLC and you get to the end, as Shepard, you talk to the catalyst and you can mention that the Leviathans have joined the fight. Your creator has joined the fight, you know, which if you're Shepard, should be like a mic drop moment, right? Yeah, guess what? All this shit about you being invulnerable, well, it's all bullshit, and I know it is, and your creators have joined the fight. You know, dad's home, and you're screwed.
Right.
And yeah, it's not. And the catalyst says, okay, well, they're welcome to, but we're just doing what they told us to.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, there very well could be a intergalactic issue going on that we have no concept about. Because we're looking at how old is the universe? 14 billion year old universe. We're looking at a cycle of Reapers that have been going on for a billion years. And there may be an issue that's now 5-6 billion year old issue that's been going on that the Leviathans tapped into, that they found out was happening. And is a threat on a scale, on a timeline significantly longer than anything that's going to make, you know, cycles of 50,000 years seem like just drops in the ocean. And that,
yeah, and
could be threatening galaxies.
It might sound weird, but it might be the better ending, having the Leviathan having created the Reapers and then basically wiped out the Leviathans, only for Shepard then, however many cycles later, to wipe out the Leviathans, or I'm sorry, to wipe out the Reapers and the Catalyst, because then the Leviathans are no longer a threat and they're not controlling everyone across the galaxy anymore.
Right.
So
yeah, but like what if the actions of Shepard actually put us more at risk of whatever the greater issue is out there in the universe? And then now what if we have to mount some sort of response to that, because like we broke the cycle, but there's a greater ticking bomb out there that's coming. And had the Reapers been ready for that, they would have been able to fight it off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we're getting into the Marvel, like,
yeah,
realm. Well,
you gotta ramp it back up. I mean, it's you know, there's got to be a bigger bad out there somewhere. There's got to be something else going
on.
There's always has to be, right? And so, you know, like, so how do you fight back against something even bigger and badder? You know, like, what else is there in the universe that could be able to do that?
Yeah.
You know, like, what else is going on? So,
you know, One of the other interesting things I wanted to mention before the end of this episode, just a theory that I saw on some forums.
That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to get tattoos. I'm going to start like tattooing theories on my arms.
Interesting theory that I saw was that the Reapers were just an allegory for the original sin. So the Reapers were basically God's judgment coming to wipe humanity and every other species off of the face of the earth for the original sin. The original sin, of course, would be humanity wanting to attain the knowledge of gods, right?
Okay.
Eating from the tree of you know, the knowledge of good and evil. But eating from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil in this theory would have been activating the mass relay.
Okay.
So I can kind of see where they're going with that, especially because there's so many Jesus allegorical details for Shepherd.
Sure.
Right.
Sure.
And well, he dies to absolve humanity of the weight of the original sin.
I guess so. You'd probably want to lay in some other things like a warning not to have done it and the temptation to do it.
Yeah. Like, if Shepard was very against space travel, this would work.
Right. Like Shepard was tempted by a woman to do it, and the woman was tempted by a snake. And the snake could have been an alien, you know, like
could have been the elusive man.
The elusive man, something like that. Yeah. I don't know. That's interesting.
Yeah.
I wonder if there's other connections you can make.
There's so many details that obviously the writers at BioWare are Judeo-Christian scholars, I think, some extent.
I'm sure they're scholars of all sorts of things too.
Yeah, because there's so many little details in there that are beyond coincidence that we may have to have an episode one day of like, you know, is Shepherd supposed to be Jesus?
Right.
Allegories where we kind of examine these different qualities of Shepherd.
That would be fun. Make it, you know, he just doesn't have the right beards, the options to make a Jesus looking Shepherd.
Can someone maybe through mods on PC create Jesus Shepherd?
That's what we should do. So
there you go.
Before you get your PC in, somebody should, can you look up mods? I bet there's a Jesus mod out there somewhere. So we should send him links to a Jesus mod so that your next playthrough you can be Jesus Shepherd.
It's pronounced Jesus.
Oh my god, it could be the most offensive. Can you do like a really bad Hispanic accent?
And then stream it. I'm not gonna do that.
And then just offend everybody. Oh god.
Yeah, not gonna do that on air.
Oh god. That would be so bad. Oh, okay, don't do that. Anyway, I think we're done with the show now that we're making all sorts of terrible jokes. Well, we've been doing that the whole time anyway. Well, anything else you want to share before we go?
Yeah, I'm going to be continuing my playthrough of Mass Effect 3 on Twitch. That's at N7 The Legend, same as Twitter. I'm almost done with Mass Effect 3. I'm just a little bit past halfway. So I imagine that I'm going to be streaming probably 3 more times before I'm finished with Mass Effect 3. Maybe I'm not accounting for DLC here, but I'm trying to get it done before my gaming PC is delivered.
It seems pretty quick.
And that's on the 13th. So
how long is each of these streams going to be? That seems pretty fast.
I'm thinking 3 hours. So
okay,
another 9.
I always just end up running back. And hours. I spend so much time just running back and forth between people going, did I miss a conversation thing over here? Where is this person again? Like,
I totally get you because I don't like leaving a stone unturned, especially in that game.
I need to like, I don't know. I just wanted to. Okay. Yeah. Well, good luck with that.
Thank you. That's part of
what makes it hard for me to keep playing is the amount of time it takes to just go from conversation to conversation. I need to finish the trilogy. I haven't finished it yet. I need to finish it. I need to get back and play some more. But sometimes I just, you know, okay. So just my playthrough of Mass Effect 2, part of the frustration is even with the entry stuff and even playing these ridiculous characters that I've started, I don't think I'll ever be able to get back my original playthrough of Mass Effect 2 with all the decisions I made. Like, I love that original playthrough, but I don't think that I can remake the decisions that I made the way I did with the character that I, and like, that's part of my frustration is that like, that's my playthrough. I want that back.
That's your Canon Shep.
That's my Canon Shep. And I just, it just doesn't feel right still. And maybe I can try and start another one and just see if I can like be really careful about the, like the intro questions and get that as close as possible and then just commit to it, because I've restarted it a few times and it just never quite feels right.
You know, I know that you're not a huge fan of Mass Effect 1, but I will say that there are, me replaying the trilogy back to back to back now, I'm seeing it. There are so many seemingly inconsequential details in Mass Effect 1, choices you make where they overlap in ways you never would have expected come Mass Effect 3. And it doesn't mean the end of Mass Effect 3. It happens while you're playing.
Right.
So,
yeah, it's the time it takes to just like run down corridors and just find somebody on a ship. That's the stuff that just like wears me out. You know, like if there was less of that and more of just the, you know, the action and the interesting dialogue that happens after something happens, or like the, you know, the denouement of the situation and seeing the thing that unfolds, you know, like that stuff. I love that stuff. I absolutely love that stuff. But it's the time it takes in between all the stuff that makes me just go, oh, this part takes so long. Because it's all those little bits that just take forever. So,
yeah, I was thinking about how sweet Mass Effect, if the next Mass Effect had the type of cinematic quality and animation quality as like Final Fantasy, imagine how compelling the scenes could be. I mean, that'd be crazy, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I just want less of the like time it takes to between stuff. I have some issues with other role playing games too, especially playing back through them again. Is some of the non-skippable stuff. It's just like the time it takes to get through it, because some parts of it are just so good. And then the other parts, like the, I don't know, the slow parts. Like if I'm going to sit down and I've got 2 hours, if I've got lots of work to do and I've got family stuff, but I've got like an hour or two to just do it, I don't want to feel like an hour and a half of it was running down corridors and trying to figure out who to talk to. You know what I'm saying? I want to feel like I actually made some real progress. That's what I want to feel like. And that's the frustration. And when I make that actual progress, I want to feel like it totally matched the character that I was wanted to play as. And I don't feel like, you know, like, wait, this doesn't make any sense, because that's not how I ended Mass Effect 2. Oh, crap. No, that's right. Because the decision I chose isn't the same thing I chose. Crap. It's not. Oh, it's just not right. Yeah, that's stuff.
And there's another effect from streaming, right? Especially when you're streaming, because when you're streaming, you feel a certain compulsion to keep the pace upbeat.
That's
you
true.
Don't, you
that's
can't true. Just take your time and read through things. That's boring to watch, right?
Right.
And we're not like, you know, we're not ninja. People aren't going to watch us do that. Yeah, I feel the same compulsion when I'm playing RPG games to kind of like pick up the pace, not take my time, not be diligent, read every detail, kind of skip over some minor choices maybe.
Yep.
But with Mass Effect, that becomes pretty hard.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I only get so much time to play games, so sometimes it's a little bit hard to do that. The other thing to do is to just kind of watch more playthroughs, and then I can skip like past some of the run through stuff so I can catch some of the story bits, especially from playthroughs where I wouldn't have made those decisions, because then I can see the stuff that I won't choose. And that's fun. I've done some of that. Like I've spent some time watching playthroughs for like the really high Renegade stuff, because like a lot of those Renegade decisions, like I just didn't make. Like I went very Paragon on my main playthrough. I made few Renegade decisions, but I went very Paragon. So watching some of the more that stuff is interesting, and I don't have to play through it again to catch the story bits on like somebody else's playthrough. So I've spent more time doing that, because I can keep that on the side while I work on stuff. You know, like that's a little bit easier to do than to play through it again. But if I'm playing something, I want to focus on it. But then if I'm focusing on it, I don't want it to be hallways. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Always in elevators. Yep. All right. Well, we got to wrap it up. You guys know how to get a hold of us. You guys know where we are. And you got anything else going on? We've got Mass Effect tonight. We've got the Xbox Game Pass show tomorrow night. So if you enjoy the crazy banter and you like video games that you can play on your PC and Xbox and even your phone, which is crazy because of the cloud gaming thing, then check out the Xbox Game Pass show. It's tomorrow night. You can listen to it on any of your podcatchers. And we'll be every week we talk about one of the new games that's out on Xbox Game Pass, but it's also out on other stuff as well. So you don't have to be an Xbox Game Pass person to enjoy the show, because we talk about a lot of games that are just new and coming out. So we recommend you come check it out. And if you pick up those games, whether you're on Game Pass or not, you can always play with us as part of the Game Pass gang. And I've got a group on there who have been playing Destiny 2, which, man, speaking of games in a little bit of time, this weekend my son got to go hang out with his grandparents. So I spun up Destiny 2 again because I hadn't played any of the last two years of content. And holy crap, that game has improved over the last 2 years. That game's amazing. So good. So good.
I'm going to have to try Destiny 2 again, because I think I only tried it one time when it was like first available to me. I don't even know when that would have been, but I think I downloaded it, played it for like 30 minutes, and I was like, I'm deleting this.
Dude, so good. So good. So good. Yeah. And Tree in chat says, hated the first few Citadel visits in Mass Effect because it took so long. Yeah, that part really slows down in Mass Effect 1. And then it picks up after that. Mass Effect 2 was, I don't know. Mass Effect 2 is great.
It was more of an action hero tale than Mass Effect 1 was. Mass Effect 1 was to sci-fi what high fantasy is to like Skyrim. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Mass Effect 1 felt more like Star Trek. Mass Effect 2 felt more like Star Wars.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. It's Mass Effect 2 is when, of course, that's when EA bought BioWare. So there were some shakeups with how things went, I'm sure. Daydreamer Nick here in chat says, is there any possibility the Catalyst was hoping to eventually see the organics win and see how far evolution gets to where they eventually surpass them and win and thus become better tools for Leviathans? I think that's a stretch to say, like Shepard makes it to the Citadel, approaches the Catalyst, and the Catalyst is like, congratulations, it was all a test. You know, like, oh, wow, thanks. This is quite the elaborate prank. You really got me.
There's all of a sudden a mustache, and he's like, hey, you made it through my test. Yeah.
Cool test, man. Thanks. Like, all right. Glad we could prove you wrong.
Yeah. Sweet, dude. All right. Well, hey, it's time to wrap up the show. Thanks, everybody, for being here. And I'm glad you enjoyed our secret episode. All right. Well,
and of course, why don't we mention what we're doing next week?
Yeah.
Because that's the start of a new chapter in the Mass Effect Lorecast. We're going to be talking about the factions of the universe, and we're going to start with the Systems Alliance. So I'm not even sure how many episodes the factions are going to take us. I'm expecting it to be a decent sized chapter, but it should be the next big thing for the Mass Effect Lorecast.
I'm excited. This is going to be fun. So I'm looking forward to it. You guys have a wonderful week. We'll see you next time. Until then, be safe. And hopefully we'll see you tomorrow night for the Xbox Game Pass show. Same time, same channel. We'll see you there. Bye, everybody.
Thanks for tuning in to the Mass Effect Lorecast. We'd love to hear your opinion and thoughts on the lore of Mass Effect. Reach out to us on Twitter at Mass Effect Cast, or check out the Robots Radio Discord. Also, you can send us an email at masseffectlorecast@gmail.com.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Ahoy there, ye landlubbers. Avast, my name is Captain Logan, and I'll be your guide out on the Sea of Thieves. If you love the idea of stealing treasure, cutting down cursed skeletons, fighting off krakens, and raiding forts filled to the brim with shinies, then Sea of Thieves is the game for you. Join me each week as I dive into the news and bring back the nuggets of information that any sailor worth their weight in salt would desire. You don't have to be a pirate legend to gain access to my podcast. Just search for Keelhauled, a Sea of Thieves podcast in your podcast app of choice, or head over to robotsradio.net or captainlogan.podbeam.com and get ready to set sail for adventure. Arr.
My name is Brian Burton. It's been 26 years since the bombs fell. And since I've left the vault, I've been trying to rebuild. But this isn't the Appalachia that I remember. There's so much more to everything going on. And I promise to find the answer. So if you're out there, if you're listening, just hone in on these coordinates. Remember, there's a place for you at the end. Omega.
The Omega Broadcast Fallout Story is available on iTunes, Spotify, and many great podcasting sources.